Oh, hi, everybody. My name is Matt Storrs, and welcome to Mattsplaining. On today's episode, I have an expert on who I'm very excited to talk to. Expert, please introduce yourself and tell us what you're an expert in.
Hi, I'm Jeff Zimmerman, and I'm an expert in storytelling, or I guess an expert in teaching storytelling, depending on how you look at it.
Fantastic. I feel very confident about my understanding of storytelling. And I think that one of the most important things that a lot of people overlook when it comes to storytelling is the importance of having the beginning, middle, and end. So many stories, they're just a middle. It's just the storyteller doesn't know where the story is going or what the intent or the purpose of it is. And so then you're just up there and you're like, okay, where are we going? Where are we going? Where are we going? And then it's like, and then my day ended. And that's the end of the story. Like that might be good for like a cocktail party or like hanging out with your friends. But if you're getting up on stage and you're telling a story, people want that conclusion. They want you to learn something at the end of it. And I think that one of the things that people often get kind of stressed about, but I don't think that they should, is when to start pitching the product when you're telling your story. Because a lot of people, when they're talking about the beginning, middle, and end, and they just have that middle portion, they think like, oh, well, I'll just start dropping some hints about how this story is sponsored by Taco Bell or how this is a story sponsored by BetterHelp. But they don't actually go in and say, hey, if it wasn't for the chalupa or what have you, I would not have been able to survive that day that I got attacked by that rabid group of puffins, or whatever the circumstances of the story are. That's just literally looking around my apartment at things and using them as examples. But
I like that you've got a stack of Taco Bell and a rabid puffin in your apartment.
That's I do. I live a very interesting life, is what I've come to ascertain. People think like, oh, if I have this amazing new device or new type of spreadsheet or app that I want to sell, I have to have a compelling story. I have to have all of these different things that I can pull in about how everything is going to, the example of the person in the small town farmer that used my system and then made $1 million. You don't necessarily need to do that. You just need to connect on an emotional level with your audience. And if you do that well enough, anybody is going to be happy to buy your new spreadsheet system. They just need to know who you are and connect emotionally. And I think that people, go ahead.
Well, I feel like I don't like 1,000,000% disagree with what you're saying, but there are a few tweaks that I would make.
Okay.
And okay. I don't know if it's appropriate for me to make those now, or you want me to wait?
You can, I have a couple other things that might tie to it. So it'll be helpful. And I think people are also concerned over like the timeline of events and about like how they address the number of people that are in a story. And I think that a lot of people have this idea about like, oh, you can combine similar people, or you can combine events or cut down on the amount of time between those events to help facilitate a stronger connection emotionally with the story as a whole. But I think the most important thing that you can do is actually add in extra people. Tell me, go on a tangent for 2 minutes about a character that's not going to show up again at all throughout the story. That somebody that like you, the person that was in front of you in line that was waiting to get a coffee, or just the person that like literally earlier that day of your performance that has nothing to do about the story that takes place 5 years in the past. Tell me everything you can about what happened to you today. And then maybe a little bit at the end of what emotional resonant thing happened to you 5 years in the past. And I think people just often overlook that. And with
I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Okay. And then with adding more people, I want to know if you interacted with Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. People say like, oh, there's too many dwarves, I can't know all the dwarves. I say there should be 13 dwarves. We should add more dwarves to the Snow White story, because then you have all of these different people that Snow White has to interact with and you have to keep track of, kind of like the Game of Thrones mentality, where you just have to have as many characters as possible. So like you have to have a sheet to follow along.
Yeah, well, Matt, I'm sorry. Is this a clean podcast?
Oh no, you can curse all you want.
Are you fucking with me right now? Like, this is the exact opposite of good storytelling. but please continue.
Oh, based on what yeah. you've heard so far, about how much of that would you say was accurate?
I would say that you started out pretty accurate, and then you started going real deep in the woods.
Okay.
So I would say that, like, yeah, but beginning, middle, and end. I mean, I have my own feelings about the use of that phrase, but I think it's popularly accepted. But then, and I mean, you can talk about, look, plenty of stories are used to sell products. This is a capitalist country, and stories sell products all the time. Everybody knows it, and that's fine. And you don't have to have, like, the Chalupa be a substitute for your carburetor or whatever gave out in your car. And it doesn't have, the Chalupa does not have to be the hero of the story. It should just be in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But then you really started kind of wandering around the bushes a little bit. Like okay. I mean, if you want people, oh, wait a second. So how much of that? I would say I would give it 20% accuracy, and then 100% the first minute, and then gradually do into like 0%.
Excellent. That precipitous cliff, so to speak, that you instead of a rising action, it was just falling off the cliff.
Yeah. Plummeting action.
Yes.
plummeting relevance. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, like, you guys, Matt and I are friends and friendly colleagues, so I feel fine to just break his balls a little bit here. Some people might say otherwise, but those people's opinions do not concern me. But anyway, so do you, I mean, I'd like to correct what you were saying, that's the impulse here, but I want to, people don't learn if they don't feel like, you know what I mean? Like, people only learn if they feel like being corrected, so you have to be in a receptive state, and I don't want to.
Oh yeah, I mean,
over explain on your podcast here, and
no, I mean, that's what we're here for. We want to be corrected, and
because you see people on stage who do believe it.
Oh,
you know
what yeah, I mean?
They're wrong, but
right,
but it's not an inaccurate representation of what is rattling around between people's ears out there.
Right.
So in that way, you're not wrong.
I see. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So people's perceptions can vary so widely. And what are some of the things that you found are either with what I was talking about or with your experience with storytelling that you found most important?
I mean, okay, so I'm going to start with the beginning, middle, and end. Everybody talks okay. about beginning, middle, and end, but I feel like it needs to be a little more specific because people don't really latch onto it, or they say, well, okay, in order to understand this story, first what you got to know is my grandpa came over from Ireland in the 20s, and he only had a potato in his pocket. And they give you all his backstory, and I think that's the beginning. But that's not the beginning. What we just need to know, I teach like a 5-point thing. Every story is you need, go get, return. Who are you in the story, and what did you want? Because it's fine to have a cast of thousands in your story as long as everybody in the story contributes to an understanding of who you are and reveals who you are in
right.
your reaction with them. I mean, you probably shouldn't do it because it's going to get long and kind of boring anyway, but the reason that Game of Thrones was so compelling until it wasn't is because, they had all these characters, but they revealed things about one another when they interact.
Right.
Right. So in your story, you want to say, this is what I wanted, and I wanted this because this is what I thought it would do. And I wanted it so bad, I thought I needed it. And then, therefore, I went to go get this thing. And so once we're on board with who you are, we find you basically likable, and it's like, huh, I didn't necessarily want, I wanted the same thing you wanted, but for a different reason, or I didn't want what you wanted, but I relate to that reason. Then we're off to the races. That's all.
Absolutely.
It'd be like 2 or 3 cents. One, you're really good. It'd be a high two. Doesn't matter. You've got to be quick. And then you go get the thing you wanted. And in that quest to get that thing, you're overcome obstacles. Oh, here's this thing. I've overcome that obstacle 2 or 4. And then, oh, shit. I didn't see that other obstacle back there. Now I'm 3 steps back. So you're kind of like up and down, a whole out of the hole in your action. Like, and then some things, a whole bunch of, you got what you wanted, and it turns out it opened up other whole wasp nest, and then you got to deal with that. And then finally, at the end of the thing, it's like, or not at the end of the thing, at the end of the go get, which is the quest, mm-hmm. the road of trials, to example, we'll call it, you're like, all right, here's the big bad guy, the video game. You fight the bad guy. You're out of bullets. You kill him, but you're out of bullets, and you're bleeding out, help. And you're like, all right, I barely need it. Then a real bad guy comes out of the cave. You're like, oh. And you got to figure something else out, and that's a total surprise. And however you figure that out, and then that's the real win. And then it's the road home, what I call the return. Yeah, what did you learn? But it doesn't have to be like in that moment. I hate it when people say in that moment I realize the
story. Oh yeah, that's one of the notes that I have here. The importance of saying the phrase "and I learned." Every story needs that, definitely.
Right. Well, here's the thing: the reason cliches are cliches is because they are tools that are so useful that everybody uses it too much.
Right.
So whenever anybody says in that moment I realized, or so what I learned was, that to me says, hey guys, check it out. Going in, bringing it on home here. Here we go. Watch me. Right. Don't do that. But do say what you learned, or say how you changed, so that you are now a wiser, more reasonable version of yourself. And then that buys you also a lot of credibility and makes fun of a more vain and naive version of yourself for wanting that thing to hurt.
My thinking on it is, it's kind of like when you're flying on an airplane and the pilot comes on and says, hey, we are about to land in Milwaukee or what have you. But they don't walk you through and say, hey, we've engaged our landing gears. Hey, the wheels are out. They just say, we're going to come down soon, but you're not going to know exactly when it's going to happen. But then once you hit the wheels hit the ground, that they've hit the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And I say that like the definitive, the return bit, the insight bit, doesn't have to be that long. It just has to be so specific and so clear that it's happened that there's just no point talking
right
after you say it. Bill Burr is really great at closing specials with a very definitive return to a story. So he does his Bill Burr thing for like 45 minutes and then tells a long story and he lands it. And it's kind of a callback to the whole act, but it's also a piece of insight. And it's two sentences. And then he's out of it. He does not.
Right.
Anyway. So, yeah, that's what I would say. And if you want to sell a product, like by all means, and storytelling is a huge buzzword in business, and it's a hugely neglected concept in business because people just say the word. So anytime you're in a situation at work, it's really good, but you are a storyteller. You are around vulture, right? You are around people who did not value the art until they decided to learn to tell a story today.
So right.
What I would say is the story you would tell about business is how you had a problem, there was a problem. Something involved with the business solved that problem, and it doesn't have to be in a necessarily even a favorable way. It could be like, and this is how I became the seasoned executive who can really handle crises because I have. When I was younger and more naive, walked right into a whole bunch of crises and learned the hard way how I should have handled them. Therefore, I'm your guy. Now, that's fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have a story. If I have time, I used to work. So I was a PR guy at the Time Warner Cable. I started their blog, their Twitter. Like I had to tell the C-suite why this Twitter thing was probably a good idea for business. If that gives you a sense of where I mean, we were with digital communication, right? I was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And one day there was a huge outage in the East and West Village of New York City. So that's no internet, phone, cable, none of it, TV for the most densely populated neighborhoods in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, were people pissed, right? They were lighting me up on Twitter personally, on my work account. Hey, get this thing going. Everybody hates their cable company and should anyway. And then this was another level. And I would say that it's psychologically damaging. But did you know that Jon Bon Jovi and Chuck Schumer lived in the same building?
I did not know that.
2010. Yeah, they did. And you want to know how I know that? Because they were both yelling at me on Twitter, and I looked them up in the system, and I was like, oh, look, they're in the same building. It was bad news. But it's bad PR. It's beginning to get picked up by Wired and the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and it's my job to somehow put this fire out that I didn't start. And PR, a lot of times PR is about just getting out the box. Well, what had happened was, it turns out, I went down to the head engineer from Manhattan's office like the following week, and then there was all this chatter around. And it turns out, like, if you look at a manhole cover in Manhattan, it ain't clean and like nicely labeled, right? There's just stuff jumbled around, pipe, wire, nobody's labeled anything. And a steam pipe had busted a leak, and then the steam condensed on the manhole cover and dripped all down and everything. It rained in there, and that caused an electrical fire with a Con Ed wire, therefore melting Time Warner Cable's fiber optic cable. And like, you can't go out there and be like, I don't know, maybe New York City and Con Ed should get their act together, right? You don't throw your partner plus like, so what do you do? Well, look, I learned that a fiber optic cable, a piece, it's all spun glass in there, and one wire in a big thick fiber optic cable can carry all of the data and internet and TV for an entire New York City block, and it's the width of a human.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so then they bundle them all together, and then they like branch and split. But this was a trunk line that went up to the main plant. So it was just so happened to be the worst one. Well, mm-hmm. when you cut it, you gotta, like, imagine if you had a ponytail and you cut the ponytail off, you got to reattach it original hair to original hair.
Right.
So I was able to write that story, take pictures, show the picture of the manhole cover, take a picture of a clean, like, normal fiber optic cable and like what that looks like, and then the one that had gone on fire, it looked like something scraped out of a bomb in college. And then I said, this is what happened. And really, the miracle is that the outage only took 8 to 10 hours, right, to reattach mm-hmm. all of that. And so that ladders back to the corporate talking points of Time Warner Cable is always working behind the scenes to provide a clean, seamless experience. You have no idea, like, the technical difficulties that you overcome daily in order for your TV to cut off. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not really selling a product because you kind of either have cable or you don't at that point. But what I am saying is, like, there's a lot more going on than you think. Put that on the company blog. Send that out to Wired and Gadget, Gizmo, New York Times, you know, what have you. They can pick it up. Because bloggers are inherently stressed for content, right?
Right.
So they'll leave it. And so, like, they post it. And lo and behold, the chatter, like, the negative chatter dies down. And then once our story starts propagating and getting out.
It's the fascinating dynamic of just the openness and honesty of, let me inform you about how this is. And people being like, oh, wow, we never really considered that. And it just sounds like you handled that so effectively.
Well, I mean, what happens is now all these people that read that have a cocktail party understanding of how this works. Now you, all your listeners.
Right.
So y'all going to be at a party. This is going to be, did you know the fiber optic? And like, so I put some things in there, some images in there in order to make it memorable, you know?
Right.
And like, marketing people will tell you, like, they talk, like to talk about things that are sticky, you know, mm-hmm. what's sticky, the floor of a movie theater, right? My child's high chair, that's gross. Don't talk about sticky. This is just what's memorable.
Right.
But so I said, so the thing about Chuck Schumer and John Bon Jovi, you can go to your little party this weekend. Maybe you're on a date. I don't know what your life is like in that regard, Matt. You're on a date. And like, all of a sudden, you got facts about Chuck Schumer. You can tell somebody how fiber optic cable works. Okay, and but that your mind hooks on that Schumer and Bon Jovi because they're both famous and like incongruous. Your mind hooks on the fiber optic cable, the image about the ponytail, original hair to original hair. And so I'm telling this story, right? I'm doing it, and I'm telling the story. And so now you've learned these things. You could go repeat this story. And at another level, and if you will allow me to be cocky, on some level, you're thinking, hey, this guy might know what the fuck he's talking about.
Right.
Like this guy might be able to solve my business problems. And that's what telling a story does for you in a business context, that just sharing a damn spreadsheet or a tweet won't do.
Right.
Anyway, I'm off my high horse.
Oh, no, that's so insightful and so good. It actually reminds me of earlier this week, I dropped off a vanilla extract that I made to a friend who's a big baker. And they told me, they shared with me a quince infused alcohol that a friend of theirs had made. And then they just started rattling off all of these amazing and super interesting facts and analogies with the quince. And I'm like, this is just so fascinating. And by the end of it, I made the joke of like, oh, now I have cocktail conversation fodder for the quince. Like if I get into it, and I feel like that's an amazing thing. Like you just take a little bit from each interaction and it fills me with a little bit of energy hearing those things that you provided, what my friend provided. And I'm like, oh, it just fosters better connection and like better memory of that experience and that story. And I think that that's just a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't sit there and do a bunch of grunt work there too. That was kind of a high point of my cable company career. Because if you tell people a story that goes 6 inches deeper than they thought you were going to go, they will love you for it. And then from a PR perspective, right? Because like, it's like, oh, if you go 6 inches deeper than you thought, they will not ask about the shit that's 3 feet deeper that you really don't want to talk about.
Right.
So anyway, I mean, that's kind of the bad guy hat of it. But
yeah.
But nevertheless, people then enjoy, they're glad they talk to you.
Truly, truly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff, this has been so insightful and so informative. If people wanted to learn more about storytelling or learn more about you, where would you recommend that they go?
Well, if you go to my website, jeffsummerman.com, you can see some of my stuff there. And I'm teaching a class right now that has an empty seat. And you know, so there's room for one more. I can also, if you go to my Instagram or my website, you'll kind of learn more about me and both my work as a performing storyteller and stand up, as well as like I'm trying to get into more corporate coaching stuff because that's where the money is. So yeah. I'm happy to do both. And like if you spell my name correctly, Simmerman, then you will find that I'm very easy to find.
Excellent. Yeah, Jeff, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate you joining me today.
Of course, of course. Thanks so much for having me, man.
Awesome. My name's Matt Storrs, and this has been Mattsplaining. Quick shout out to Ryan Lawson, who made the theme music for Mattsplaining. He's part of Beat Blender Studios, which can be found at Beat Blender Studios on Instagram and TikTok. Or if you're in the market for some amazing music, you can contact him directly at beatblenderstudios@gmail.com.